You're listening to episode 43 of IDRA Class Notes.
I think the biggest success was breaking down walls that they may have set up themselves, that we as a school may have set up, and actually that in itself became a wonderful, in the sense we broke these walls down, people started to open up, but I think just being a sincere listener with these parents became something that worked in our favor, because parents had a lot to ask and a lot to say.
Welcome to IDRA's Class Notes podcast. I'm Aurelio Montemayor. In this podcast series, we explore issues facing education today and strategies for teachers and administrators to better serve all students. We encourage you to share your thoughts, questions, and suggestions. There will be details at the end of this podcast on how to contact us, but please do. If you like our show, we encourage you to tell three colleagues or leave a review for us on iTunes. That helps others find us. We've set up an email alert to let you know when a new episode of Class Notes is available. If you are not subscribing to this podcast, our email alerts can help you stay up to date. Just go to our website to sign up. I also want to let you know about a monthly electronic newsletter called Graduation for All. It's free and shares news and resources focusing on graduating all students across the country. Again, you can sign up at our website, www.idra.org. Our topic today is family and teachers communicating. You know, our last podcast was with our president and CEO, Dr. Montesel, and we had been reviewing the Quality Schools Action Framework. And we especially focused on the outcome indicators and the school system indicators. So you have certain indicators that are important, and then connected to those and preceding them are certain fundamentals. Today, we're going to have the intersection of governance at the campus level with two very important school system indicators, parent involvement / community engagement and teaching quality. And so that our focus will be the intersection of those. Our presenter today is Dr. Rogelio Lopez del Bosque. Rogelio has just returned to IDRA after having served as a principal of Eastwood Academy in the Houston Independent School District for 5 years. His professional background includes teaching English, Spanish, reading, and ESL, as well as serving as a reading consultant, publisher, writer, supervisor, and assistant director for multilingual programs. He has also taught many courses at the college level. Rogelio has a master's degree in educational administration and a doctorate in educational leadership. Rogelio and IDRA did a lot of work together while he was principal. So I'd like to, first of all, welcome Rogelio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Aurelio.
Let me ask you, in terms of the broadest sense, why is communication important between parents and teachers?
Well, I've always thought that communication is very important for several reasons. First, let's start off with the whole idea that parents feel, in many cases, that they need to be listened to. And based on the research and the studies that we've done in the Houston area, we know what parents really want. Parents really want to have information in terms of schools and how they operate, not necessarily for themselves, but to be able to help their children. Therefore, communicating with parents is not just simply having conversations with them. I think that the process is very important in terms of getting them involved in all sorts of issues. First, making sure that they're comfortable, that we have a school-friendly atmosphere for the parents, that they feel valued on the campus, that they're invited with plenty of time and notified of events going on in schools. But whenever we do have a meeting, that they are participants in the process, not just listeners. Let's say, for instance, any time that I was very open about situations at Eastwood Academy, in particular our budgets, and what we were going to do and what we planned to do if there was any concerns. When we did our school improvement plan, it was presented to them in both languages, in Spanish and in English, of course, and they had a say-so if there was any concerns or any doubts, and they were invited to discuss further issues related to campus improvement plan, to budgets, to the issues related to the schools, any major concerns that they may have had. But I think that the communication starts by really, really asking them what their needs are, What they want and what their needs are two separate things. However, we must combine both of them in the sense of being able to provide for them what they really aspire and what they need right now so that they can get that to their children.
Okay, now, parent involvement at the secondary level seems to be a big challenge all over the country, certainly at high schools. What did you do with your teachers and with staff that supported this vision that you have and the results you wanted to have in terms of communication with parents?
I know that many schools don't have that option, but one of the things that I did do was in the hiring process of new teachers, I set a certain level of expectations that I had with them. And one of them was not only that they had good teaching practices and so on, but that they were also available to do other things that, because of it being a smaller school, they had different hats to wear. However, one of the things that critical and most important is that they valued students and that they also valued the parents. And valued them in the sense of making sure that they got information to them in the appropriate timing so that they knew what the children were doing and to involve them in the process.
And what do you think were the most important things that you did to support the families and connect with the families?
I think that the most important thing that's necessary in order to connect with the families is to have an open door policy for the parents. Parents ask a lot of questions, and when we answer the questions, that we answer the questions in a manner that's not above them or not below them, but that it's comprehensible and understandable. Let me give you one example. As the parents started building, you know, their self-assurance and knowing that we really were listening to their concerns and questions and what they wanted to do, then they started asking questions like, what is the difference between the tax test and the Stanford test? And we assume
the tax is the state-required test. The
right.
State-required test, yes. Okay.
And the Stanford, of course, is the one that was required by the district. And they wanted to know what those were and the implications of those exams. So when you hear these questions, you know that they're really delving into more in-depth information and how it's going to affect the future.
Well, with the parents, did you stay away from difficult topics? Did you stay away from saying anything that was critical or negative?
Nothing. What we basically did was use very positive conversations. We spoke in a positive tone about the children, about the school, about the community. And I think that as a general rule, working with the parents in a friendly, positive, meaningful, and most valuing manner actually opened up.
So you did sometimes have to teach touch on very difficult things, not very pleasant things, and you didn't avoid that.
We did not avoid that at all. You know, we did not avoid the issues of the students having difficulty in learning and things of that nature. But we also had a process of interventions with their children so that they could get involved in the process.
So when a child was having problems or there was a challenge or whatever, behavior issues or academic issues, you had a process.
Yes, we had an intervention process, which was very, very basic, very simple. It did take some time. However, if there was an issue related to a student, the teacher would send in a form. All the teachers who taught that student would be called in. The student would be called in. They'd have a meeting with the student. It wasn't about scolding or putting the child down. It was about, here's what's going on. What are your responsibilities? How are you going to overcome this? So we're going to give you a timeline to work on it on your own, and let's see how it works out. And then we'd assign a mentor to work with them. After that, if they didn't meet that, then we'd go with the parents, and we'd bring the parents in. We'd give them another opportunity. And it was amazing because it wasn't about putting the child down. It was about giving them the responsibility of taking over this issue that they were dealing with at the time.
And in this whole area, just focusing on the communication issues between teachers or instructors and families, what were your biggest challenges?
I think that the biggest challenges were having a small auditorium, not having enough room, and standing room only for the parents.
Oh, really?
Which was a major challenge, but a good challenge to have. I think that one of the other challenges in terms...
Well, wait a minute. You're saying your challenge was that you had great participation from the families.
Yes, I did.
That might be a whole other conversation to
yes.
just to You're a high school?
High school.
And was this a high school of middle-class English-speaking kids?
No, this is an inner-city school in the east end of Houston Independent School District.
Were some of them poor, like free or reduced
85% of our students were low socioeconomic children.
And you had a lot of participation?
I had participation from about 80 to 90% of my
parents.
Well,
then all the parents spoke English, right?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, most of my parents did not speak English.
Okay.
But the fact that I am bilingual, I was able to communicate in both languages too.
Okay, so then if your challenge wasn't bringing the parents in, what were your challenges?
Well, my challenges was actually sort of keeping up after I opened up the doors for them and everything, is actually keeping up with what other issues that we're dealing with. College. They were now becoming more interested in college, the FAFSA forms, scholarships. And yes, they were inquiring about their children because that's a big major issue with our kids. But, going to college and having funds, but we were able to bring in the dual credit courses, which, by the way...
Were you creaming the kids? Were you getting all the A students?
Not at all. These were students who applied to Eastwood and only had so many slots, but we took them mostly on the basis of attitude. Do they want to go to college? If yes, you want to work, yes. And many of our students came in not having passed tax in the ninth grade, but they would come into the in the eighth grade, and then come into the ninth grade and make commended scores.
Okay, so one challenge you said you had was that because you opened the door and the parents participated so much, then actually dealing with all the issues came up because every family wanted to talk about something. What were some other challenges you had in the communication between your teachers and them?
Actually, I think that one of the issues that I did have was the fact that many of my teachers did not speak Spanish. However, that was resolved by getting parents and students who served as translators at the time, including myself and counselors and people on staff. But basically, the communication between parents and teachers was excellent. The teachers were always glad to have the parents there and to discuss issues related to the students and discuss issues related to the school itself.
Now, I know, because I've worked with you, about all the academic success that you had. It took you 5 years to get the campus there. When you got there, in name it was a college prep, but it took 5 years for you to get it, that in fact almost 100% of your seniors were going to college when they graduated. Now, that was a huge success, but going back to the communication with the families, because that's such a huge challenge in most high schools, what do you think were your biggest successes in the communication with the home?
I think the biggest success was just basically breaking down all the walls and tearing down walls that they may have set up themselves, that we as a school may have set up, and actually that in itself became a wonderful, in the sense we broke these walls down, people started opening up, but I think just being a sincere listener with these parents became a major asset to us, or it became something that worked in our favor because parents had a lot to ask and a lot to say.
Last spring and early summer when you gave your farewell and you told the parents you were leaving, what did some of the parents tell you about their experience? Because some of them had been with you all 4 years.
Yes, I had had parents there for 4 and 5 years because I had 2 and 3 children mm-hmm. there. They wanted for me to assure them to a certain degree that whoever took over was going to do as good a job or better than I.
But what was the good job you did? How did they describe what they liked about what you had done?
They liked the issue of discipline, the whole issue of rigor, the whole issue of high expectation on the children, the whole issue of the college culture that we built, the whole idea of building the dual credit courses, which saved them a lot of money and exposed our children to college. Some of them had gotten as many 60, 70 hours of dual credit work, which put them basically ready to go into the third year of college. But I think that they also appreciated the fact that they were given opportunities to learn themselves because we brought in computer technology for them. We brought in English literacy, and they were interested in college courses themselves. So in essence, this is what they liked. All of the new things that we had done are brought in to Eastwood. And I'm not saying I did it. We did it as a team because the staff worked very well together, the parents worked very well together, and I had a lot of support from the region office as well.
You mentioned something in passing earlier on about Spanish and the sessions were bilingual. How important a factor was it that both languages were being used?
Most important.
Did it have to be perfect Spanish for Mexico?
No, it did not have to be perfect Spanish, although I have a bachelor's in Spanish, and I've taught Spanish and English both. But the fact is that it did not have to be perfect. I had some teachers who did not speak perfect Spanish, but the parents certainly appreciated the effort that they made. I and another do have a degree in Spanish, so therefore I could do perhaps a better job. Nevertheless, they did appreciate that. But by the same token, I could not isolate my English-speaking parents, who were both Hispanic, white, Anglo-Saxon, African-American, and Asian-American. I had different groups, but most of them were Spanish speakers, and they did appreciate that very much.
And now, besides the language, in what other ways did you validate whatever the culture was of the families that came to your school?
Well, the fact that we had students, most of my students came from Mexico, others came from Guatemala, from Honduras, from El Salvador, from Vietnam, and so on. And I think that the most important thing is that I valued their culture, I valued their language, and we valued that as much as we could, but we celebrated it every day. It wasn't like celebration of Hispanic Week, once a year, or African American Week once a year, whatever. We celebrated all of them every single day. And I think parents appreciated that. We were not there to put down anyone because of their language or the background. And I think the most important component that I had in school is we need to help each other. We're all different, and we help each other.
Did the families over time connect with each other?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There were some families that finally got to know each other because their children were hanging out together in school, and they got to know each other, and they realized that they have the same values. All these parents have the same. They want their children to succeed. They want their children to go to college. They want their children to have good grades. They want them to be successful. And they were willing to do their part. I always ask the question when I do parent training, well, if you want your children to do well, why aren't you going back to school? And most parents would say, well, I'm too old, I can't do it anymore. But these parents were different. They say, well, where is it? I'm ready for it. So they challenged me to bring in the additional
right.
stuff.
So then if somebody would ask you, can you have an effective parent involvement program in a Title I high school?
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. No doubt about it. It's not an easy task. There's a lot of work to be done, but it can be done. If you have the right people, and then you have the right attitude, and you have the expectations and the right tools to work with the parents, I think you've got it made.
I think, Dr. Lopez, this is an excellent personal example of efficacious governance at the high school level. And I think that it's from the concrete experience like that. This is not theory. It's not some structure somebody thought up. You've spent 5 years doing that, and I congratulate you on that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. We want to thank you for tuning in. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Robledo Montesel in an upcoming episode.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.